The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parsha, Parshas Naso, has a number of subjects and places which refer to the Milas HaShalom, Godel HaShalom, how great is peace. I'd like to mention a few of them this evening. Firstly, we'll go to Perek He, Posuk Aleph. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Tzavis b'nei Yisrael v'shalchu min ha-machane kol tzorua v'chol zo v'chol tomei l'nefesh. Hashem said to Moshe to say, command the children of Israel that they should send out of their camps kol tzorua, anyone who's stricken with the disease of tzaras, which was similar to leprosy. It wasn't leprosy though. V'chol zo, that was someone who had an impure omission, and someone who becomes impure by coming in contact with a dead person. Male or female should be sent out of the camp, because these are all tumas, these are impurities, and they should not cause impurity to their camps, which I dwell amongst them. Vayasu kein b'nei Yisrael v'yishalchu eisom el mechutz l'machane kasher diber Hashem el Moshe kein osu b'nei Yisrael. And the b'nei Yisrael did accordingly. What were these camps? We had the Mishkan. The Mishkan was the sanctuary. The Mishkan and the Chotzer. The Chotzer was the courtyard of the Mishkan. Now that camp, that area where the Mishkan and the Chotzer were, that was called Machne Shechina, the camp of the Shechina. And no one dwelled there. Now this correlated that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when the first Beis HaMikdash stood and the second Beis HaMikdash, and in Yetz Hashem, please God, when we have the third Beis HaMikdash, so this correlated to the Makom HaMikdosh, to the Beis HaMikdosh, the temple, the sanctuary, and the Azor and the courtyard. So this was from the Machne Leviya. Excuse me, Machne Shechina, the camp of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then around that, we learned in last week's Parsha that the Levim surrounded it from three sides. They surrounded it from the west, the north and the south. The east, to the east of it, was the camp of Moshe and Aaron Ubonov. Moshe, Aaron, and their sons, the Kahanim. That was the second camp, and that camp was known as Machne Leviya. In the time of the Beis HaMikdosh, so this correlated to the Harabais outside of the Beis HaMikdosh, but still on the mountain where the Beis HaMikdosh was built. Then there was a third camp. And the third camp was a further parameter, and that's where all of the Klal Yisrael dwelled with their campsites, their degolim. And they surrounded this on four sides, like we learned in last week's Parsha. There were three Shvatim, three tribes at each side. And this was called Machne Yisrael. During the time of the Mikdosh, Beis HaMikdosh, this would be Yerushalayim, Kol Ha'ir, the city proper. How much of Yerushalayim would it take in? This is questionable. The old city for sure, how much of the new city, this could be questionable. But this would be Yerushalayim, inside the walls of Yerushalayim. So there were three camps. Rashi tells us, he brings from the Gemara, that these Tameim that we mentioned, these people that were impure, that were sent out of the camps, they had three different dinim, three different laws. Not all of them were sent out to the same camps. But the halacha is as follows. Atomei lenefesh was nishtaleach mimach neshkina belvad. Someone who was impure because he came into contact with a dead person. So he was not allowed to go into the mach neshkina, the camp of the Shekhinah. That was out of bounds for him. But he could stay in the mach neleviyah. He could stay in the camp where Mesha was, and Aaron and his sons, and that would be Harabais, and certainly Yerushalayim. The Gemara actually learns this out because it states, Vayikach Meshe es Atzmesh Yosef Imo. Moshe took the remains of Yosef with him when he left Egypt, and it states he took it with him. This means he kept the casket with him at all times. Imay b'mechitzosoy. So we see that he took the casket of Yosef into his place of dwelling, which was this, not in the first camp, the inner camp, but the second camp, the Machna Leviyah. So therefore, Atomei Lenefesh was sent out of the Machna Shechina, the inner camp, but he could go in the outer two camps. The one who had the impure omission, the Gemara tells us, learns out, that he was sent out of the first two camps. He was sent out of the innermost camp, the Machne Shechina and the Machne Leviyah. But he could stay in Machne Israel, in the camp of Israel. This would mean that in the time of the Beis HaMikdosh, he could not stay in the place of the Beis HaMikdosh, he could not stay in Anhar Bais, but he could stay in Yerushalayim. The first one that caused a tumah lenefesh, some type of spiritual impurity, the second one that was dissolved, it's brought, that actually comes from physical indulgences. The third one, who's the Metzera, the one that has this disease of leprosy, he was Mishtaleach Mikol Gimel Machnes, from all three camps. He couldn't go into the Machne Shechina, certainly. He could not go into Machne Leviyah, to the camp of Meshav Aaron, and he couldn't even go into Machne Yisrael. This means during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he would not be allowed inside the Chemesh Yerushalayim, inside the walls of Yerushalayim. You'd have to stay outside. So this is the halacha. Now, the Gemara questions that though. Actually, the Gemara, Rashi brings it not here, but he brings this in Parshas Tazria. Then why? Why was the Metzera, Mishtaleach, out of Kol Gibam Machnes, all three camps, even the camp of Israel? In the Midbar, where everybody camped, the Degolim campsites, he couldn't stay there. He had to go out. And this is what it says later on. It says in Parshas Tazria, it states, Bodod Yeshev, Chutz Mimachaneh Meshovai, that he has to dwell alone. Alone, not even together with the other Tameim, not even together with the other ones who also had to go out of the camp, who were also impure, but he had to dwell all alone. So why is this? So the Gemara answers, and from this we hear a great principle. Unfortunately, it's one that's overlooked many times. The Tamei Lenefesh, the one that became impure to dead people, we would say that he fell spiritually. Okay, if he fell spiritually, he has to remove himself from the innermost part of Klal Yisrael. But he still has a place in Klal Yisrael. The fact is, not only does he still have a place in Klal Yisrael, he can even go into the Machna Leviyah, into Moshe Naron's camp. The Zov, which comes from the overindulgences in physical luxuries or physical passions and lusts and desires and so forth, he has to go out further. He's further from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he still has a place in Klal Yisrael. So he can dwell in Machne Yisrael. He can dwell in Yerushalayim. But the Metzera, why did he get leprosy? And what chet? Because of Loshon Hara and Machlekes. The Chazal tell us, Hu hivdil bein ish v'chaveirei, bein ish v'ishtei. He went and he caused dissension between man and his fellow man. He went and he caused dissension between man and wife. He went and caused machlekes b'Yisrael. He has no place in Klal Yisrael whatsoever. Kodesh Baruch Hu told him, Bodad Yeshev, you can't live with people, then live without people. You have no place in Yisrael. Chutz Machne Meshoveh. You can't even live with the other tameim, with the other impurities. But you go out. Where all of the Degolim were, these were the 12 tribes, 600,000 males between 20 and 60, not counting their wives and their children and the old people. So this were many, many, many millions of people that had a huge camp in the Midbar. He could not stay in that camp. He had to go out until he got rid of the tzaras, of this disease, which came because of this chet, this sin. During the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he would not be allowed in the city of Yerushalayim. But out, see. Because you cause machlekes in Yisrael, then you can't live with Yisrael. Your goruah, you're worse than all of the others. And this puts into perspective to us the importance and the levels of various averus. The others came also from averus, but it doesn't reach the level of the Metzera. Why is it so terrible? See, it was machlekes. We know people that always said they live with machlekes, always causing machlekes, always saying Loshon Hara, dissension. So what's so gefällig? What's so terrible? This is a terrible, terrible chet, which is more chomer than all of the other chatoim. And this is the Chofetz Chaim dedicated his whole life to. Well, the whole Sefer on Loshon Hara, where he shows that there's a possibility, besides how severe it is the possibility of transgressing Yudalev Leisa says, and Yudalev Esen, over 20 mitzvahs in the Torah. But aside from them, this is something which is relevant to the whole world, but especially to Klal Yisrael. Because we all know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echot. Kodesh Baruch Hu is one. And he said that Yisrael also is one. Miki Amcha Yisrael Gai Echot Baritz. Shlita Gemara tells us that Kodesh Baruch Hu puts on tefillin, like Yisrael. Gemara asks, in our tefillin it says the Shema. That's amongst the things which are written in the parashas of the tefillin. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echot. What does it say in Kodesh Baruch Hu's tefillin? It says, Miki Amcha Yisrael Gai Echot Baritz. Who is like Israel, a single united nation? No nation is united like Klal Yisrael. Kulanu b'nei ish echod, kulanu achid. The concept of united by Klal Yisrael is different than all other nations. Actually, the Maral brings that this is nirmas, a remes to this. A subtle indication to this is the Echod. The Echad is Aleph Ches Dalet. Aleph Ches Dalet refers to that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and Yisrael is one. The letters, numerical value of Aleph Ches Dalet is 13. And there were 13 sons to Yaakov. He had 12 sons, but Yosef was counted as two, Ephraim and Manasseh. So the Aleph, that represents Levi, because he was the Shevet HaMeyuchad. Levi was Hivdel. Levi was always separated for higher things. And the Ches, eight, this represents the eight sons from Rachel and Leah. Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar and Zvulun, and then Yosef and Binyamin. And the Dalet, which is four, that represents the other four sons, which were from the Shvaches, the maidservants that Yaakov took. And this is Don and Naphtali, Osher and God. And together they make up the Echad, an Achdus, where they are one, they cannot be broken. If they are broken, that's disaster. So that's one place here in the Parsha where we see the importance of Sholem. Second place in the Parsha that we have it, and that's in Perakei Posek Yud Aleph. We have the Parsha of the Sote, the Noef and the Nefes. That's the adulterer and the adulteress. Here the Torah tells us what to do when we have an adulterer and adulteress. And from here we see the Milas HaSholem, the greatness of Sholem, of peace. Sholem, actually, what does the word mean? Sholem means a holistic, where it's in its entirety. The opposite word of Sholem comes from the word to Hashlem, Sholem, to bring together in a unit. The opposite of the word of Sholem is Chelek, Machlekes. That means just a fraction of something, where it's, the whole is broken or separated. Now, the Torah here, this we see from two aspects in this parsha of Sote, the Milas HaSholem. Firstly, the Torah guarded very carefully the Kedushas HaZivug, the sanctity of marriage. And to the Torah was very, very serious. The Torah takes a very, very serious view to this, and a very strict view. Well, even though by the nations of the world, they've recognized the sanctity of marriage, they've spoken about the sanctity of marriage, but it doesn't really mean that much to them. They take a very light-hearted view towards it. Not so with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Torah. It states, V'dovat b'ishtoi, b'lei b'eshes chaveri. One of the first commandments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the world was, V'dovat b'ishtoi, b'lei b'eshes chaveri, that you shall cleave to your wife and not to the wife of another man. The whole institution of marriage represents an achdus, a unity, which is from the strongest unities given to mankind. And through this, there is unity in the bais, unity in the home. And through this, the Nasik and Bosar Echod, the Torah says, they become like one flesh through the child, through the offspring. Now, if this unity is not kept, Then the Gemara tells us, the Torah tells us, and the Gemara explains, Umol Oretz Zima. The world becomes full of promiscuity, and it becomes full of Zima, of a total confusion and mixture. And a son and a daughter do not know who they come from. You take a man and he takes someone else's wife, and he has a child is born. Meanwhile, this woman is a married woman, so that offspring is brought up as their child. That offspring is brought up as their child. Then, really, this is the adulterer's own child. He doesn't know it is. So the Gemara says, what happens when there's this type of promiscuity? Umole oret zima. Nimtse she av nose es bitai. Viach nese es achese. You'll have a world where a father can marry his daughter and a brother can marry his sister, and they never know the difference. And this continues in the world until it rots the very core of the world, the very core of civilization. So not only does this bring churban habayis, destruction to the home, this brings destruction to the world. On the other hand, if this zivug, this institution of marriage, is guarded, so then it brings strength to the world. It brings vitality and vibrance to the world. You have a world like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created like he wanted to be. Then there's a further point. The Shleisha Shutfim Ba'odim. Actually three shutrim, there are three partners. It's Ish, Isha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Man and woman and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They all play a role. And it states that when there's Ish vi Ishta Shalom Beneihem, if this zivug, if this marriage is protected and it's well and strong, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells with them. And he plays a role in the procreation. And this further goes into society. But ain't Shalom Aleichem, but if it's not protected and it's not well been, then he's mistalek, he leaves. And this causes a further deterioration and a further destruction in society. In the very heart and core of society. That's why, what we mentioned many times, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he took the letters of his name, and he took the Yud, and he put that in Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, and he took the He, and he put that in Isha, Aleph Shin He, and that's his Shutfis. Where he is together, he plays a role with the Ish for Isha. This is why it states in the Parsha, it says, Daber al b'nei, v'idaber Hashem al Moshe le'mon. Hashem said to Moshe to say, Daber al b'nei Yisrael, v'yamata aleihem. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, you should say to them, Ish ish ki siste ishtoi, u'malei boi mo'al. A man, when his wife deviates from the Taras HaMishpocha, from the purity of the family, and rebels against him, or makes an offense against him, so she goes to another man. Now, Rashi brings from the Chazal, why does it say Ish Ish, twice Ish Ish? And also it says Mo'al, like there are two offenses, Mo'al and Mo'al. Lam dechoshim elis bishnaim. Because it's a double offense. If there's a fissure, a fault in this Zivug. Not only is this an offense one against the other, but it's an offense against HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells with them. And that's why it states Ish Ish, and that's why it states Mo'al Avay Mo'al twice. So from here we see the greatness of Sholem from this aspect. Then we have a second aspect in the parsha, aspect in the parshas of Saita, that we see from the Milas HaSholem, the greatness of Sholem. The Torah is telling us that what happens if a man suspects his wife, she's having affairs with another man, and he warns her. He warns her in the presence of two witnesses that she should not go to that other man. And then two witnesses come and they testify that she went into seclusion with that man. And then was over by Ruach Kino. Now he suspects her and he's very jealous of her. And in such a situation, given the proper circumstances, she becomes forbidden to him unless her innocence can be proven. So the Torah gives a way in which her innocence can be proven. And then she would be permitted to, they would be permitted to reunite. So the Torah gives here in the parsha the whole whole practice of what has to be done. And amongst that, there's waters taken in the Kiyor V'Kanoi. There was the fountain which was in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes his name on a parchment. And he puts the Kohen puts the parchment in the water and erases HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Now this was used to prove her innocence, so they would be able to reunite. So this was used to bring Shalom Benish Lishtai. Now the Kiyor V'Kanoi, we spoke about this a while back, the Kiyor V'Kanoi, this was the copper fountain and its copper base. These were donated through the by the Noshim HaTzidkoniyos, the righteous women of that when Israel were in Egypt, they donated the copper mirrors for it. And the Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a plan that it should be made from them. This was very appropriate, because they were the ones during 210 years in Egypt guarded the sanctity of the home. It says even though Egypt ruled over their husbands, they never ruled over their wives. And never once was there any time when the sanctity of the home was broken. Except one incident that the Torah tells us about in the 210 years. And even that was by error. And this was to testify that all of the children, the myriads of children, because this is what Paro became so afraid of, they were multiplying by the hordes. The myriads of children that were born in Egypt, they were all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu testified, all pure. And there was no mixture of any blood, any other blood in them. And this was the door that was Eicher to go out of Egypt and to see all of the great miracles and to go into the desert. This was because of these women, the Noshim Tzidkoniyos. That's what the Gemara tells us, b'schus Noshim Tzidkoniyos, we were Yotzei Mimitzrayim. It was through their schus that we came to the level that we could go out of Egypt. So therefore it was very appropriate that this procedure should take place by the fountains which was made from their copper mirrors. And then the Torah tells us before, it was through their copper mirrors that they would arouse the love of their husbands. And then the Gemara tells us that go and see how great Sholem is, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was even prepared, he's even prepared to erase his Shem HaKadosh, his holy name, in order to bring shalom bein ish li ishtei. So this is a second place where we see the Milas HaShalom. And the great loyalty that the Noshim HaTzidkoniyus had and that the Torah demands in when it comes to the Kedushas HaZivug, the sanctity of marriage. A third place we see it. And that is the second half of the Sedra is devoted to the Yud Beis Nesim, the 12 princes, one from each Shevet, that at the time of the erection of the Mishkan, this was taking place by Shchedesh Nisan of the first year. Well, this was still the first year that they went out of Egypt. They went out on the 15th of Nisan, and then the following year they weren't 12 months out of Egypt yet. They established the Mishkan, and there was great celebration. So the Nesim, every day one Nasi brought a gift to celebrate the Chanukah HaMishkan, the inauguration and sanctification of the sanctuary. Now, when you read about the Yud Beis Nesim, you see each one brought a very elaborate gift. Golden vessels and silver vessels, and there were animals for sacrifices, and there was meal offerings and so on. But what is very strange is that each one brought exactly the same gift, even though each gift had its peculiarities and had its specifics. But each one of the 12 were perfectly identical. There was not one deviation whatsoever. So we have two questions. Firstly, why wasn't there any deviation whatsoever? 12 people want to bring gifts. It's a special time. It's a special day. So each one thinks of what he would like to bring. Why wasn't there any deviation whatsoever? The second question is Parshas Naso is, I believe, the largest parsha in the Sefer Torah. I might be mistaken, but I don't think so. It's the largest laning. I think that sometimes when we have two parshas together, you might be able to put together a larger laning. But that's because of two parshas, two sedras. So Parshas Naso is, I believe, the largest. What makes it the largest? This, that the fact that the Torah repeats over 12 times each gift. It says the Nosi, the prince of Yehuda, Nachshon brought, and it tells us the whole gift. Then it says after first Yehuda came, then Yisachar came, and then Zvulun came, their prince, and it itemizes again exactly letter by letter, word by word, the same gift. And we know the Torah doesn't use extra words. The Torah is very stingy when it comes to words, even a letter. It should have said the first gift, and then it should have said v'chein kulam, and so bit all. Many times the Torah tells us. So why is it that it happens that each one brought exactly the same gift without any deviation? And secondly, the Torah repeats it over 12 times. So the answer to the second question is why the Torah repeats it over 12 times is in the Midrash. The Midrash tells us, incidentally, I once read in a Sefer where he wrote that the Midrash on Parshas Nosai is also the largest Midrash that we have on any Sedra. And much of it is due to the Yud Beis Nesim. Well, that's what it's due to. The Midrash says that they were not the same gifts. Physically, they were the same gifts. But they're by no means were the intentions the same. The Midrash says every gift was totally different. When Yehuda came, he brought a gift representing his Malchus. Yehuda was the king. From him came Malachim. When Yisachar came, he brought a gift representing Torah. From Yisachar came the great Balei Torah. When Zvulun came, he brought a gift representing Kamrus. Why Kamrus? Kamrus and Panosis HaTorah, Haksokas HaTorah. Because the Zvulun were the ones that they lived by the sea, they loved traveling, they loved trading, they were great traders and merchants, and they used to make a lot of money, and they made a deal with Yisachar, their brother Yisachar, that we will make the money and you make the Torah and we'll divide. And the Medrash goes through all 12 that on the intention of each one and how each one fit his entire intention into the physical gift that he was bringing. And the Medrash goes through great length to explain each one. Also, now we understand why the Torah wrote it over 12 times, because it wasn't the same thing. It wasn't a duplication of the same gift. Yehuda bought one gift. Yisachar bought a different gift. Zvulun bought another gift. And it goes through all 12 like that. We actually gave a few years ago, we gave a series of shiurim on that midrash, where we, it was three or four shiurim that we went through all of the 12. So therefore, there were 12 different intentions. Total intentions. And that's why the Torah has to write it 12 times. Okay, good. But the Chofetz Chaim Zichron Livrach asks a kasha. And a good kasha. Good question. He says, if that was the case, so why didn't each one give a different gift? If I had this intention and you have that intention, another person has a third intention, so each one should give his own gift. Physically, it's a different gift. Why does each gift have to be physically identical, and then each one has to somehow reduce or limit his intentions into the aspect of that gift? That if the Torah, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is what you bring, and I want to inject my own intention in it, my own feelings in it, and your intentions and feelings are different than mine, all right, good. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't subscribe. He didn't demand anything from them. This was all from their own. So if you have in mind that you come to a chasana, and one person thinks, look, I think for the chosen and kala, I think some cutlery, that's what would be best for them. So you bring cutlery. Someone else comes and says, you know, I think some jewelry would be nice. Another one has a different. So the same thing over here. So then he answers as follows. He says, they didn't want to deviate. Because had they deviated, it would have been a chiluk and a pirut. It would have been a dissension. Firstly, even if there wouldn't have been any hard feelings, it would have been dissension in the unity of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is one. It's just like you take an army. There has to be unity. They all have to march in the same direction. Since all 12 were bringing the Chanukah Samizbeach, they didn't want to deviate. Secondly, it could cause dissension. Because what happens? If I bring a gift and someone else brings a gift and a third one, and let's say they're open there, and then this one thinks his gift is better than mine, or mine is better than his, or maybe I should have done that, and you start to look. And it could bring out keener jealousy, or somehow it could bring out hard feelings, or this or that. Or maybe it'll make someone else feel bad. So therefore he said, no, they won't deviate at all. They'll all bring the same. They were elaborate gifts and beautiful gifts. And they all got together to decide. They all brought the same. That's bigolui. That's what we see. What you inject in that gift, each one has a right to put his own feelings in it. Each one has a right to put his own intentions in it. Each one has the right to put, interject his own kavana in it. So this is what the Kabbalist Chaim says. This is the Achdus of Klal Yisrael. Every person, if you stop to think, you see this is the tefillah. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, many people ask, see, what, how come everybody davens the same thing? A person should daven every bit tefillah shebelev. It's your heart. So everybody should make up his own tefillahs. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah said, no. No, sir. We will make a matbeah hatfilah for Klal Yisrael. We will make a format of tefillah for all of Israel. And you should know that the Gemara is very, very harsh on anybody tampering with that matbeah. Anyone tampering with it. It's also l'shana is matbeah shel chachomim. So far that when it came to any matbeah, when it came to a matbeah of a get, the chachomim told us what has to be written in a get. The Gemara brings, if someone tampered with that, the get was possible, and it's not a kosher get, even though according to the Torah it might be a kosher get, it's not, and she's still a married woman. So now, call the Mishana, Matbeah, Shetov, Bechomim. So the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah said like this. He says, we will make the matbeah, we will make the format of the tefillahs, and that'll be all the same for all of Klal Yisrael, because Klal Yisrael is echot. Every individual, he can inject his own feelings into the tefillah. This individual wants to put this feeling in, this one wants to put that kavon in, okay. Because there, in the as far as the golui of what has appeared, you are not all in the achdus. The Shalom. Then they also, at certain places, they even allowed us to interject, to add to it in certain places in the tefillah, but that was as long as we kept the overall format. See, here we see that the 12 brought, the Torah repeats it over 12 times because every gift was a different gift. But the physical chaimer, the outward physical form was all the same in order that there should be Shalom Yisrael. So that's a second, that's a third point where we see Milas HaShalom. Fourth point where we see Milas HaShalom is we have here in the Sedra, this is in Vav Chav Beis. Vav Chav Beis is Vaidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. Hashem said to Moshe saying, Daber al Aaron ve'al Bonav Lemor. Speak to Aaron and his sons that they should say, Ko Sivoracho es Bnei Yisrael Emor Lehem. This is how you should bless the children of Israel. There's a mitzvah asay, positive commandment for the Kahanim to be Mavorach Klal Yisrael, to bless Klal Yisrael. Now we've given special shurim just on this in the past in this Sedra, but that's not the point of the shir today. But what we want to bring out is beautiful brochas. Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmarecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless you and guard you. Yo'er Hashem ponav elecha v'yichunecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give light from his face to you and v'yichunecha and give you chayin. You saw Hashem ponav elecha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should look favorably on you. Should look more favorably on you than he does on other nations. Now what we're interested in is how the bracha closes. Yisem lecho shalom, and he should give you peace. So here we see that the Birchas HaKahanim closes with the Birchas HaShalom. Now, this is not just by coincidence. The Medrash says on this, Reb Shimon ben Chalafto Omar, Godel HaSholem, how great is Sholem, She'ein Keli Mikabel Barocha Ela Sholem. There is no vessel which can hold the brachas except the vessel of Sholem. As it states, Hashem Yevorech Esamo Vashalom, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives many brachas to Klal Yisrael. But what's going to hold all of these brachas? What's going to keep all of these brachas? What will keep them from disintegrating, from deteriorating, from vanishing? So you need something. For example, you go and you buy fruit. You buy the most beautiful fruit. So you buy grapes and you buy cherries and pomegranates and dates and figs and apples and oranges and so forth and so on. But how are you going to take it home? So you need a vessel to hold all of the brachas, to hold all of this fruit. Because if not, it's going to start rolling in all directions and you'll lose it. So the same thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. He says, I give Klal Yisrael so many brachas, but what's going to hold it together? What's going to keep them from losing it? I need a vessel that will hold all the brachas. He couldn't find any vessel. This is what Reb Shimon ben Chalafto is saying. He couldn't find any vessel that would hold all of the brachas and guard all of the brachas except the vessel of Sholem. So first he brings another pasuk. That's why it states after all the brachas, Hashem Yivorech Hasamei Vasholem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Sholem. Then he said, Av Bebirchus HaKahanim, Acha Kol HaBrachas Simon Bisholem. The same. That's why by Birchas Kahanim, the Kahanim give all of the wonderful brachas, but you need something to hold these brachas in. That's why they say Yosem Lecho Shalom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you Shalom to hold all of these brachas. If you don't have that, then the brachas will just fall apart. Shein HaBrachas Me'ilis Klum. The brachas are useless. They're useless. Elim kein shalom imohem, unless you have shalom with them. You can have all of the brachas in the world, but they are totally useless. She'en habrachas me'ilus klum. Elim kein shalom imohem, unless you have shalom with them. Blez ha'kof ha'imer, gobel shalom she'en chesim kol ha'tfila ele shalom, ve'en chesim birchis kahanim ele shalom. He said, now if you look and you'll see that all of our major tefillahs end with Shalom. The Shemayna Esu. Are we chesim? We conclude all of our tefillahs with Shalom. And Birchas Kahanim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu concluded with Shalom. Because of this reason. Because if you have Shalom, then you have everything. If you don't have Shalom, you have nothing. Now, the Medrash Rabbah, here in this parsha, on this, elaborates on the greatness of Sholem, and also in many other places. We've elaborated. This evening we wouldn't be able to elaborate. The Maral writes he has a whole nesiv, chapters on Sholem in his Nesiv Salem. He writes. He says, "V'hadvorim asher omru razal b'sholom b'midrashehem lo yochel esom adibur." He says what the sages wrote on the milus of Sholom, on the greatness of Sholom. He says there's not enough words to say it over, to elaborate. They wrote so much on it. So we won't be able to even scratch the surface, but what I would like to do is to mention one great underlying principle of why Sholem is so great, and at the same time why it's so elusive. Now when we speak of this, we're speaking in the large picture and in the small picture. In the world, in the large picture, has been at war ever since the creation of the world. You have the nations of the world and their wars. This is history. The small picture, in everyday life, there are the constant social interactions, the constant fribbles and motion orders and quarrels and so forth and so on. So we're speaking both in the large picture and the small picture. Now, I would like to quote three statements from the Chazal, and just briefly build from this a all-underlying principle of Sholem that the Maral Miprag brings. First of all, there's a Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Daf Yud Amud Beis, that says that Ein Maskirin Sholem B'Beis HaMerchatz. You're not allowed to give Sholem Aleichem to anyone in a bathhouse or in other such unclean places. You meet your friend in a bathhouse, not allowed to say Shalom Aleichem. You can say hello, you can say good morning, good afternoon, but not Shalom. Why? Kishmei Shel Yisborachu. Because Shalom is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's one of his names. Not allowed to mention Hashem's name in a place which is not clean. That's one statement. Now, and here there's the question. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many midas, many qualities. For example, emes, erech apayim, rav chesed. He's very compassionate. He's truthful. Fact is, it states chesom shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. The symbol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his flag, his flagship, is that of truth. Yet we don't find that you're not allowed to mention those things in a Beis HaMerchatz. Doesn't say you're not allowed to mention truth or compassion or slow to anger. So why Shalom? Why peace? What's the difference there? Then there's another statement from the Chazal. This is brought in the Gemara in Yevamos and also in Vayikra Rabba, Perek Aleph. Godla Shalom Shehav HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina B'Davar. How great is Sholem that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu says a lie, a white lie, for the sake of peace. And the Gemara brings a few sources, but one source was by Sora, that when the angel said that Sora would give birth, so she didn't believe. She didn't believe. And she said, how can I give birth? I'm so old and my husband is old. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Avraham and he said, why doesn't Sora believe me? He sent angels to tell her that she's going to give birth, right? or a prophecy that she'll give birth. See, why isn't she believed? Why does he say that she's so old? And he didn't mention to Avraham that she said, and he's so old, because he didn't want to cause any faribul. So the Gemara brings there that there he changed a bit from the truth, deviated from the truth, l'man hasholem, for the sake of peace. And the Gemara brings it's a mitzvah, and then the Gemara says even better, the Mar Baskin, not only it's a mitzvah, it's an obligation. Obligation that one, for the sake of Sholem, is obligated not to tell the truth. All right. Now here the question is why should Sholem take priority over the emes? We all know how important emes is, how important truth is. It's Torah's emes, the whole Torah's emes. Why should Sholem take priority over it? And then there's a third maimer. This is a Medrash in Vayikra Rabba, Perek Tes. It says, Borei kama godla Sholem. Come and see how great Sholem is. Because b'chol ha-mitzvahs, by all mitzvahs it says, ki sireh, ki sifkeh. A mitzvah comes your way, you fulfill it. If you see an Aveda, if you see a lost article of your friend, you must go and take it and safeguard it. But you don't have to go, you don't find people, at least normal people, you don't find walking down the streets looking for lost articles to see if they could find it and fulfill the mitzvah. See, Torah says kisira, if you're walking along and you see a lost article, you see his horse has strayed or something else. Same thing kisifkia. Or others, for example, you're walking along and you see a bird's nest. There's the din of Shiluach HaKan, which you're supposed to do with the mother and the eggs. That's if you see, but you don't have to go hunting for it, hunting to look to see, and then fulfill the mitzvah. So by all mitzvahs, the Medrash says, basically, is that when they come into your hand, mitzvah habole yodei, al tachmatzeh. When a mitzvah comes to you, fulfill it. Okay. You don't have to go looking all over the world for it. But when it comes to shalom, it says, bakei shalem, verafehu. Seek shalom, look for shalom, and run after it, pursue it. Bakesh b'mokam zever, atfeh b'mokam acher. Look for it, wherever you are, and run after it, pursue it, even to other places. Borei kamagod la shalom. You see from here how great shalom is. So now the question is, but why? Okay. Now, the Maral says as follows. He says that the whole creation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made, and the creation is something. You've had the best minds in history over the last 5,000 years study the creation, and they've scratched the surface of it. And they have learned so much, but they still know so little compared to what there is to know. That's why they are constantly learning new things. You see, I mean, if somebody gives you a little machine, so you can study it, but there's a shiur. How long can you study it for? Eventually you're going to know it all. This creation, every year, every month, every week, they come up with something new that they didn't know for the... Where were you the last 5,000 years? You've been studying the creation for 5,000 years, why didn't you know that? Today they found out. See, today. Where were you for the last 5,000 years? This is not something that came new to the creation, it's been here. It's been here the whole time. When Tom Edison invented electricity or discovered electricity, that electricity, nothing's changed in the last 5,000 years. That was always there. And not only that, not only do they find something new every day, but they find out that what they did know till now, many times, is totally false. See, totally false. They were on a wrong path. The one professor told me the quantum theory, he says, refutes principles that were held for the last hundreds of years to be absolutes. Just totally refutes it. And so on. So what does this show? And don't forget, these people are not ignorant people. This is the cream of society, the best minds of society. So it shows how much there is in the creation. Endless, endless wisdom, endless depth. I wouldn't say it's endless, but to us it's endless. Now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world, there are two perspectives to it. One perspective of what we of what has manifested, the visible. And then there's another perspective of the source of the world, the source of creation. The visible, that's what has grown. That is what has multiplied. That's what has manifested. And on that, that's ein mispor, ein erech ve'ein mispor. There is no way to humanly count it. There's no way to humanly assess it. It's far too great for us. To give you an example, how many fish are in the sea, and how much does the sea weigh. And if you know how many fish there are in the sea, that was now. So what's going to be next week? And how many different species of insects are there in the world? And how many insects are in the world? There could be, they're still discovering new species that they never knew of. They're still discovering it. And there could be thousands of species, but there could be millions of each kind. And how many stars are in the sky? And how far are the stars? I mean, there are stars now where they say it'll take millions of years even to reach them. There are galaxies they are discovering that have 100 billion stars. And they are discovering that there are 100 billion galaxies or more. See, so whatever is in the creation, this is beyond us. And this is divisible. But there's another perspective to the creation, and that's its source. See? Its source is just the opposite. The source is only one. The source of the entire creation came just from one source. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, when we look at the visible creation, we can ask a good question. Since there's so much, this uncountable volume, there's things of every size and every shape. There are things that are so big we cannot fathom them, and there are things that are so small that we cannot see them. I mean, there's the scientists today say that the human body is made up of cells by the billions of cells. See? Now, when we take this all into the greater picture, everything from the smallest to the largest, from the smallest cell to the largest star, that's a good question. How does it all live in peace? How does it all live side by side? You know, you have a complex machine. It's got to be workable. Everything has to work together. And not only how does it all live in peace, that's not sufficient, where each one will live peacefully. But there must be a harmony and a total interaction between everything in the creation, where each one works in total cooperation with the next thing. One giving to the other and one taking from the other. Otherwise, all creation won't work. And it doesn't take much seichel to realize that if the entire creation, all of the worlds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, whatever is there, does not work in total cohesion and in total harmony, then the world would have destroyed itself thousands of years ago. That doesn't take much seichel to realize. So we have a good question. How is this possible? So the answer to that is, is not from the visible world, but from the invisible source. Because the source is one. The source is one, and the control is one. The creator that created all of this, billions upon billions upon billions of different things, everything necessary for the ongoing process of the creation, was one, and he doesn't sleep. Like the Rambam writes, he created the world, Buhu Mesavev Es HaGilgul, and he constantly turns the world around. He constantly works the creation. He is the one who keeps everything working in perfect order and harmony. And if you would stop for one instant, you could imagine what would happen. I mean, what would happen if you had, let's just say, let's say you had 5,000 cars on a superhighway, and all of a sudden all the lights go out and all the robots go out. See? Doesn't take much seichel to predict what would happen. Well, this could, you could multiply this by a billion, billion times, and this is what will happen to the universe. And the Chazal say this is what is meant, Eise Shalom Bimreimov, Hu Yase Shalom Olenu. He who makes peace up high, where there, the Gemara says, is a superhighway of billions upon billions upon billions of celestial beings. Each one could be larger than the earth at high speed. And if one is a fraction of a second off, the world would fall apart, explode. O se shalom bimraimov, hu yase shalom oleinu. So what we're saying is this, is the end result of the universe is billions upon billions of loose ends. Powerful, powerful, forceful loose ends. But the control comes from one point. And that's the Creator. That's what is meant, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Echad. Now, this the Maral says is the definition of Shalom. Shalom means where the whole picture works in perfect order. In perfect harmony. Be like a composer. I don't know how many notes is in a symphony. But if you would count the notes in a symphony, it would be quite a few. Probably thousands and thousands. Now if at random you would take thousands upon thousands upon thousands of notes and just throw them into a symphony, you'd have a churban. But because the one who created the symphony is a master, and he put in enormous talent and mind and energy, so he brought all of these notes not only to live peacefully side by side, but to mesh together into a most beautiful picture. Well, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, except not with a thousand, thousand notes, but with billions and billions of everything that this creation has, from the smallest ant to the largest star. So just like the composer, what he is mashlim, he perfects and creates where everything works together, where it becomes one total picture. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does with creation. So therefore the Maral says, when the Chazal say his name is Sholem, it's not referring that his Mida is Sholem. You see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many Midos, many qualities. His name is not Emes. He has the quality of truth. His name is not Erech HaPayim. He has the quality of being long-suffering. His name is not Chesed. He has the quality of giving. But Shalom is his name. Because Hashem Meir Ala Etzim, the name defines the essence. The essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shalom, which means the one that brings everything together. That's why you can't give someone Shalom Aleichem in the Beis HaMerchatz. And that's why Shalom is Deiches HaEmes. That Shalom is a greater Mida than truth. Because the world relies on that Shalom. if there is not shalom, you are breaking. That would be, I mean, in a minuscule picture, that would be like you take a Beethoven or a Mozart that created a most beautiful symphony, and someone in the middle of the symphony starts to interject wrong notes, where he just destroys the symphony. This is what Machlekes does by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. And this is why he says, even when it comes to a question of emes or not, set it aside for shalom. Shalom is deicha esa emes, where possible, where possible. Now, then we said, Bakei shalom v'redfehu. But why do we have to go after it so much? Why is it so elusive? The answer to that is, the Maral says, is because this world is a minefield. This world is a superhighway. It's a superhighway with 100,000 cars rushing in all different directions, full speed. Unless there's perfect control, there's going to be a 100-car pileup or a 1,000-car pileup before you can wink your eye. So it's a minefield. That's why this world is muchan lemachlekes. This world is a setup for machlekes, and that's why immediately at the creation of the world, what took place on the first day, what actually wasn't on the first day. Well, first of all, Adam was created on the sixth day, but it was afterwards, but it was right in the early, the beginnings of creation. Cain harag es Hevel. Cain went and killed Hevel. It was machlekes right away, because that's what this world is. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can come and make it worth perfect, but he gives a lot of leeway to the human being. That's the Bechira. That's why you have to constantly be mespalo for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give shalom. Ose shalom bimreima hu yase shalom aleinu. Constantly. And a person always has to constantly pursue and run after shalom, because it won't come to you. Mitzvahs can come to you. You're walking along and all of a sudden you see a lost article. You're walking along and you see a nest of birds. Mitzvah haboli yodei al tachmat senah. Mitzvah that comes into your hands, do it right away. But don't wait for shalom to come into your hands, because it'll never come to you. By shalom it says, no, it won't come to you. Not in this world. This world is walking through a minefield. Bakei shalom v'rodfehu. You have to chase shalom. It will not chase you in this world. If you chase it, constantly chase it, constantly pursue it, then we hope we will find it, we will have it. But that's the only way we'll bring it into this world. So that's the underlying principle of Godel HaShalom, that we have to bring in the influence of the source of the creation into the creation, not the end product of the creation. And then with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there will be shalom al Yisrael.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za, or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za. Via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.